the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello, and welcome to today's MadTech podcast special. I'm John Still, ExchangeWise Head of Content. And for this episode, we're going to be discussing one of 2023's hottest topics, Web3. Described as the next phase of the internet by Mark Zuckerberg, Web3 is a broad term covering a more decentralized or virtual economy with a lot of implications for the media industries and beyond. Joining me today to help decipher this landscape is Niamh Lenihan. Niamh works for Women of Web3, a community helping women to make the leap into this new world. Niamh, thank you so much for joining me. Really excited to have you here.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
So yeah, there is an awful lot to get into with Web3. It's a huge area. It's something that's been spoken about across the board at all our events last year. It's something that seems to be on everyone's mind at the moment. So first of all, Niamh, tell me, how did you become interested in Web3? What was the attraction and how did you, how did that evolve?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it had a huge surge of interest last year. For me, I was actually working at Meta when they did the pivot to kind of focus on the metaverse and did the big rebrand from Facebook to Meta. And that initially, I guess, kind of like piqued my interest. I'd heard about it happening in the background. I knew that this kind of like new iteration of the internet was coming, but this kind of huge shift of the business that I was working in to focus on it really made me kind of think about it quite seriously. And back in the early kind of like 2010s, I had been working in social media, in particular working for a social media management company. And I felt like I had just missed that wave. You know what I mean? I kind of got into it when everything was starting to be built around it, when all of that infrastructure was already done. And I always was a bit kind of kicking myself that I hadn't taken an interest in it earlier. So when this kind of big shift to the metaverse happened, I thought, okay, like get ahead of it, actually start educating yourself on this now and put yourself in a position where you can actually be at the forefront. There wasn't a whole heap of education happening internally, I would say. And so I kind of took it upon myself to self-educate. And to be completely honest, found it very, very overwhelming. Went out into the kind of like wider internet and started researching all of this stuff and just found it like extremely noisy, very macho, a lot of shouting, like, you know, for stuff that's kind of like written down or whatever it is a kind of like very aggressive content and language I found. And I gave it a good go and I just was like, I think this might be too difficult for me. I think this is a little bit going to put it into too hard basket. And actually what happened then was an ex-colleague of mine, Lauren Ingram, had started posting quite a lot about Web3 and just like demystifying it and posting about it in very kind of simple terms. And I reached out to her and I just said, like, where are you getting your information? I'm finding it really hard to navigate. And she said, you know, you're probably about the 150th person that's like reached out to me since I've started posting. And she was like, I'm beginning to see that this is, there's a huge gap in the space. And so she was like, I'm going to create something. I'm going to create like a community essentially to help women specifically women educate themselves on this space so that we don't get left behind. And she was like, would you like to be a part of it? So that's actually how I became to be a part of Women of Web3. And so that was kind of the beginning, I guess, of my education journey. And it is ongoing, you know, the pace of Web3, the pace of change, new players that are coming into the market, people that are exiting the market in, you know, spectacular fashion. There's no way that you can get ahead of it. So it's a continuous journey. And that's the point that I'm at now.
Yeah, I think you've brought up like one of the most interesting parts of it for me is the noise and the complete lack of definition. I love Web3 as a catch-all term, and I know there's so many moving parts to it, so many different definitions that are flying about. For you, what do you think is the essence of Web3? What do you think defines it, or what are its component parts?
Yeah, I mean, now, I was going to say, don't quote me on it, but you're going to have me on record here. But I have kind of two things that I define kind of Web3 as, and this could be right, wrong, or indifferent. But at the moment, as I said, it is evolving. It's constantly changing. So I think a lot of different people have a lot of different definitions for both what Web3 are and what the metaverse is. The way that I kind of explain it to myself is it's two things. It's a concept, which in its like most purest kind of form, its most idealistic form, is that it's going to be the next iteration of the internet that's going to be decentralized and it's going to be community owned. So like in the sense that now when you go onto the internet, you're data and activity, your activity is monitored and your data is owned by the platforms that you use, and they decide how to monetize that and how to use that to market to you and who they sell that to. Whereas with Web3, the idea is that like eventually like you'll own all of that data and you'll have complete control over that, and you'll decide who gets access to it and whether you want to monetize that. So that's the kind of like, I guess, concept of it. It kind of cuts out the middleman. It's just like you are the owner of your activity, of your creatorship, and you exist within this like decentralized environment and you have complete control over that. That's it. That's eventually what it is hoping to get to. The other way that I kind of see it, and I explain it as well, and I explain it to my parents like this, is like Web3, which is a difficult job, but Web3 is like the infrastructure that is going to support the next iteration of the internet as well. So it's all of the technology and platforms that are going to allow this decentralized environment to exist and thrive. And that's everything from like, you know, crypto and blockchain and smart contracts to, you know, digital twins to AI to, you know, virtual reality, all of those things, all of the hardware that we're going to need that eventually, hopefully we won't need, you know, it's all of that infrastructure that's going to allow us to exist and play and work in this space. It's kind of like the players that are making up the tapestry of what is eventually going to be the metaverse, if a new name doesn't come along in the meantime. But yeah, that's kind of how I describe it to myself and to others.
Yeah, I think it's one of the big misconceptions for me around Web3 is that it just does equate to the metaverse, because obviously that's the biggest practical visual aspect that we have at the moment. And a lot of what the noise that we see in the industry is around, what are we going to do in the metaverse? What projects can we do in the metaverse? What can we sell in the metaverse? One of our predictions for 2023 from our CEO, Rachel Smith, was that we will see the end of metaverse nonsense this year. And that's not to say, you know, that wasn't the thought of the metaverse is nonsense. It's more of the end of the noise and a more practical approach to this new technology and how it, you know, how we have a functional application for Web3. How do you see that in terms of a more practical, functional overview of the metaverse?
Yeah, I mean, like the metaverse gold rush is hopefully dying down a little bit, I would say. I think, you know, with any new technological advancements or new technology waves, I think there's always like a big rush of excitement. I think there's a lot of early adopters. I think there's a lot of people who want to be the first, you know, the first to adopt this technology, the first to launch in it, the first to discover it, the first to see the value in it. And that can get like very like noisy and messy and chaotic, like very quickly. And almost like that's almost like an exclusionary thing as well, because you see all of this chaos happening and you're like, I have no idea how to navigate that at all. And 2022 was chaos. You know, yeah. What I mean? There was like so many ups and downs. There was a lot of brands, I think, that like jumped into the space without a lot of strategy behind it, just to be there, just because they didn't want to miss the boat. But instead of putting actual like thought behind it, they didn't really think about the value or the utility, I think, behind some of the stuff that they were doing. They didn't think about their customers and whether they were ready to meet them there. So doing these big launches and then having less than 1,000 people, you know, using them or showing up in these places. You know, there was the crypto crash and the scandals that went with it, and just, you know, like that was kind of like pure greed at play, and you know, things that go up so quickly, you know, do come down. There was the NFT boom and bust, you know, like digital images of cats eating pizzas being sold for, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like that's obviously not going to last either. So it was quite manic. I do think that, you know, kind of as the dust settles and we kind of come out of that kind of chaos, I think it's going to weed out a lot of bad players. I think people that were in it for the wrong reason, people that were in it to make a quick buck, people that were kind of trying to I guess, like, you know, get in fast and get out fast, I think they're all going to be sifted out. And I think what's going to happen is you'll see the companies that are actually in it for the long haul, the companies that are going to have sustainable growth, the companies that have the long-term vision, the ones that are going to actually like provide value. I think those are going to be the ones that are going to emerge in 2023 and like kind of be heralded as the green shoots of Web3, the ones that are actually going to show the value that the industry can have. And I think like that's going to come from like a few different areas. I think blockchain is going to have a really big year. I know everybody's talking about generative AI at the moment, and that's like having a huge buzz right now. But I think like blockchain is actually going to be the technology that powers that as well. There's going to be a whole heap of stuff around like intellectual property and ownership of like the stuff that generative AI is coming up with, and blockchain is going to be really valuable in working alongside that. I think, you know, more traditional industries like banking and advertising, e-commerce, supply chain management, I think they're all going to have big adoptions of blockchain technology as well. I think it's just going to really help with like efficiency, opening up a global market, all of that sort of stuff. You know, smart contracts are going to have, I think, a really big year as well. Digital twinning is a technology I think is really exciting. I don't know if you know what digital twins are, but that's like basically where it's everything that is a like physical object or a process can have a digital twin.
Okay.
And it's like it's a real-time twin. It works off data that the object or the process is constantly feeding back into this digital version, so that you can basically run like a lot of simulations and tests on a digital object or process before you have to do anything with the physical. I find that really exciting. I think that's going to have like a huge impact on healthcare. Like, you know, like yeah. You yourself can have a digital twin, you know what I mean? So if you break your leg and they can run a simulation on your digital twin to see like what would be the best course of action to help mend that as quickly as possible. I think, you know, it's going to have a huge impact on fashion and kind of the environmental impact of fast fashion as well. What else? Construction will have a huge impact by digital twins too. And then what else? In kind of like a lower scale or a smaller scale, I think we're going to see a lot of loyalty programs, a lot of brand engagement, a lot of fan engagement happening with NFTs. And I also, one thing that I actually find really interesting is I think the future of like fan and brand engagement through DAOs. So through decentralized autonomous organizations where you give, everybody in a DAO has a token and that token has a voting right. And so you could then have, you know, I don't know if this has happened yet, but like you could have, say, for example, a DAO of like super fans who sit on the board of a football team, for example, and that's like a fan vote, right, at the board level. Like something like that could be like really cool. And I just think that we're going to see more kind of emerging use cases in that sense. So yeah, I think there's heaps of real world value that can be applied. And I think also just when it comes to crypto as well, in terms of like how it's going to come out of this kind of like crypto winter that's currently occurring. Like I also work for a company called Factor who are putting like real world assets on the blockchain. So like giving collateralized lending to investors. So just adding that kind of like transparency and legitimacy, I think that the industry really needs right now. So I think, yeah, there's heaps of like utility and value to come out of the space. I just think that the companies that are going to be proving their value are the ones that have this long-term vision who are going to get that airspace in 2023 now that all the noise is quietened down.
Yeah, I think there's so much, like you say, there's heaps in there in terms of breaking it down and looking at it. And it's good to hear that there are these very tangible, practical cases for this. You know, I think a lot of the misconceptions around it, or preconceptions, I suppose, are that it is a way, you know, for a brand like Nike to go in and sell NFT sneakers, and you can have a virtual double that goes around buying things in the metaverse. And it's, I think that it's the more practical side that's going to be more interesting for brands as they get more involved. And, you know, like you said about kind of the fan culture being serviced through that and giving people more of a say and a democratization digitally, which is a really interesting play as well. One of the things that is fascinating and has been over the last couple of years are the barriers to entry, I think, for Web3. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this in our intro. You know, you talked about the start of it being incomprehensible and almost too much to take in. There's also, you mentioned a couple of times, there's this very macho culture of get in or get out, and, you know, that side of things, I suppose. Which has been borne out through the crypto scandal. A lot of people who are in it for the wrong reasons, a lot of bad players, a lot of macho talk around it. And it's some people's concerns over safety and their biggest fears have been realized, which can be off-putting in those mm-hmm. aspects of the metaverse. What do you think can be done to encourage more people into Web3 and to promote the education piece, to promote this better understanding of what's going on and all the real good stuff that's in there?
Yeah, I think you're dead right. Like it is a very intimidating space. Do you know what I mean? And like, you really have to, at the moment, I think if you want to really understand it, you really have to invest your time in it. You know, you really have to, like I was saying earlier on, like with Lauren, like, you know, going and finding all of this information, weeding through it, and then like turning it into like easily, you know, understandable and easy to comprehend information. So I think education is huge, and that's why I'm so passionate about the Women of Web3 thing. I think, like, you know, we'll leave so many people behind, people with like valuable ideas, valuable input, you know, people who can really be a great like member of this like new iteration of the internet. And just from like a language barrier perspective, and I don't even mean in terms of like, you know, like a lot of things being done in English and not any other languages, but actually like the language that we use in terms of like, there's a lot of like acronyms, there's a lot of terms that are only like applicable to the kind of, you know, crypto or Web3 world, that like to your normal person, it doesn't make any sense. And so they're just so completely confused by it all. So that's what we aim to do with Women of Web3. We don't ever want like language or cost to be a barrier. So we try and like, you know, distill things down into like easy to understand language. We try and educate around like safety and what to look out for on the internet. We keep everything free as well on Women of Web3. A lot of projects often have this cost to enter them, and we never want to have that. You know, that's I don't think that's like a very fair thing to do to people when they're not quite sure, is to ask them to take that kind of like leap and put some money into something. And also, like, not a lot of people have disposable income, right? Like, we're living in a like cost of living hard times, like, so, you know, to ask people to part with hard earned cash on something that they don't necessarily understand, I don't agree with. And so I think like education is really important, but I think the onus is on the companies that are the first movers and adopters in the space to create those education programs. I think that shows a willingness and a desire to bring your customers with you. It's not only about like educating them on whatever project you have or whatever service you're providing. You need to educate them about Web3. Like, that's the first step, right? Like, educate them about this space and then ask them to come on this journey with you. And I think it's like a responsibility that a lot of companies should be thinking about and should be taking on. I think it's up to those, like, those companies to make sure that they're providing, you know, a very kind of like equitable space for their customers to learn. Also thinking about your customers' accessibility, you know, like thinking about the broad range of people that are out there and thinking about all of the different ways that you can make education available to them. And I often say, like, I'll come back to that Women of Web3 thing, just because that's where I focus a lot of my time, is like, women are very time poor. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are usually primary caregivers, whether that's with children or extended family members. I think there's like a statistic, I think it's something like 84% of women are kind of primary caregivers when it comes to that sort of thing. And so you don't have a lot of time outside of your other responsibilities to go and self-educate on this sort of stuff. So that's like why with Women of Web3, we try and do as much as possible, where we go into companies and we work with them on workshops to educate their female employees internally. We have a podcast, which is, you know, 25-30 minutes. That's like, that's a dual learning activity. You can do that when you're doing something else. You can do that on your commute to work. You can do that when you're going for a walk. You can do that, you know, if you're doing something in the house, you can have it on in the background. We try and think about the ways that people are going to be accessing this information and meet them where they're at, versus trying to get them to kind of come to where we want them to be, essentially. And I think more companies definitely need to be thinking about that and putting resources, efforts, time into that sort of thing. I think if we want this widespread adoption that everybody is talking about, I think that that's a fundamental step that can't be overlooked.
In terms of like the education side and what you're seeing with the companies you're going into, obviously you are being asked to go into these companies, so they are thinking about it. What are the attitudes that you're seeing in businesses? Do they just see, you know, that Metaverse is a place for Gucci and Adidas to sell their things virtually? Do they understand that their, you know, blockchain, it sounds like a scary term, but it really isn't. And it's, do they get that it can be for them? Is that kind of one of the tenets, I suppose, of the education?
Yeah, I mean, it's a broad spectrum, to be honest. Often you'll have in companies where there's maybe one person or a team that's been, you know, that is now a Web3 strategist or the Web3 strategy team, who are kind of been tasked with going out and putting the feelers out there and being like, is this tangible? Is this actually going to take off? Is this happening? What does this look like for our company? We find a lot of women who come along to our events have been that person within their organization. Sometimes their company is very invested in it, where they've actually dedicated a team or an entire person to kind of like take this on. Other times they're saying, you know, this is just a project, you know, like a feeler is like, you know, you'll dedicate 20% of your time. And I think the women that we speak to at our events, they kind of go back and say to their organizations or to their managers, like, no, this needs to be, you know, this needs to be have my full focus. Like, this can't just be a project based thing. Like, we do need to actually think about like the strategy of this and how we're going to incorporate this into our overall kind of like business strategy and business objectives. And I think I think for smaller companies, they do sometimes think, this isn't for me. This is going to cost a lot of money. This is a huge activation. But there's actually so much that like smaller businesses can be doing. And, you know, even just kind of working with like AI and like bringing that into your creativity. Like, I mean, with the onset of chat, like GPT, you're seeing like, you know, how companies can actually utilize that for like their marketing and like their websites and all of that other kind of stuff that's happening right now. You know, when it comes to businesses that want to do, you know, anything to do with like fashion, you know, you're able to bring in filters, you're able to bring in all these sorts of things. So there's like small incremental things a business can be doing. I think loyalty is going to be a really big thing for businesses. I think definitely how that is going to play out, I don't know. Like, you've seen, you know, Starbucks have launched their loyalty program, right? And they're actually not even requiring, I need to look into this a little bit more because I'm trying to understand exactly who owns what on their marketplace, but they're not requiring, even though they're getting digital stamps, these NFTs, that journey stamps, they're calling them, they're not actually requiring their users to have a wallet. Okay. So they're able to interact on a marketplace. So just even understanding that is really interesting, because like then for small businesses, they don't necessarily, they can maybe have, you know, who knows in the future, in the not too distant future, maybe like, you know, there's going to be something like similar to a Shopify where like actually you can set your business up on a marketplace and then your customers don't have to have a wallet, but you can exist on this kind of tokenized marketplace. So I think the technology is advancing at a rapid rate. I think the way that it's advancing, it's taking businesses of all sizes into consideration as well. So I do think that it's open to everybody. It's not just for the big companies that have these big flashy activations, which are lovely to look at and are very exciting. And, you know, I just got my Dot Swoosh activation the other day, so I'm on the bandwagon, don't get me wrong.
Excellent.
But, you know, that's great for the companies that have the huge budgets and everything else to be able to do the big kind of like, you know, showy, glamorous stuff. But I think there's a lot of utility for smaller businesses too. And I think we'll see those use cases really kind of come to the forefront this year.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of what you're doing and what you're interested in is demystifying this process and the terminology in particular, which can be opaque. And, you know, you're talking about using wallets and that kind of thing. It can be to people of all ages. It could be it's a barrier. It could put you off thinking like, okay, I want to get this. I want to get into this app, but I need that. And I don't understand that. And it's this, yeah. Like, I think the Starbucks is a great case in point, not needing the wallet to get involved in that kind of program. It's seeing in practical terms for 2023, seeing those big hurdles being overcome and how brands can really use the smaller things to their advantage.
Yeah. And I think it's the reconsideration of where people are at as well, right? Like, we're in a very cautious market anyway. Like, people have less money, everybody, down from like, you know, your average family have less money to like the big VCs and investors. Like, everybody is working with less at the moment. So people are a little bit more risk adverse. And so it's like, okay, well, how do you meet people there? How do you like understand what their concerns are? Like, it's not just about showing you what we have developed and what, and this like shiny object that we have. It's actually like, okay, well, what's going to be valuable to you? What's going to help you? How are we going to bring you on this journey with us without you feeling like this huge chasm to overcome? And I think the big companies, the ones that have the budget, I think really should be leading with the education at the forefront and providing, you know, simulations. Okay, so your first step into crypto or tokenization shouldn't have to be that you open a wallet. It should be that you can go onto a platform and that you're able to experience that without actually having to risk anything. You know what I mean? That you can do that over and over again until you feel comfortable. So I just think the education piece is so important. And I've heard a lot of rhetoric just kind of from around the traps of people saying, you know, we need to stop with this education thing. We'll build really nice interfaces and that'll bring people on board. And, you know, this is so ridiculous. And I just don't think that's very fair to people. I think you're doing your customers a disservice. I think you're asking people to take unnecessary risks. And I think, you know, there's a whole new element to Web3. You know, this ownership piece, you do have to educate people because there is like risk and reward involved in it. It can be monetized. People need to be educated on how to utilize that properly. So I just think it's not something that can be overlooked.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. With any new technology, and particularly one as sweeping as this, it's jumping those hurdles to start with and really having people understand and know the practical applications for it. And that's, a very important place to start. Mm-hmm. Got a couple of questions to finish for you. Sure. First of all, I guess, what's in it for advertisers? Where could they start in terms of putting their money? Should it be in metaverse activation? Should it be in looking more towards the blockchain, into crypto? Where do you think the advertising industry can really get into the Web3 tech?
I think it's very dependent on who your customers are and where they're at and what is valuable to them. So, you know, I think with brands, especially brands that have a loyal following or almost like that kind of like army of advocates anyway, I think like the kind of going into the NFT loyalty space, DAO space, is a very logical move for them. I think there's going to be a lot of partnerships as well that will benefit from that kind of like NFT stuff. Like I went to a talk recently where someone was talking about like, if you are, and this is just an example, but if you love NARS and you have, you know, NFTs because you're always buying their products, and you also love, like, you know, Dua Lipa, and you have like an NFT from being at her concert, that both of those brands would have access to that information. Well, then maybe you get first choice of like a collaboration between the two or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So really tailoring offers and products and services to your customers. I think smart contracts will be interesting for advertisers. I think in terms of like ads and how they're served and the customer journey and user journey, in terms of like, okay, this person doesn't get served this until all of these different things have been completed. I think it'll increase efficiency in that sort of sense, especially with the signal loss that came in last year for advertisers. But yeah, I really do think it comes back to taking a step back, looking at your audience, looking at what you want to achieve, and then deciding which kind of technology or path is going to serve them best versus what you want to do. Like I said before, I think a lot of brands nearly jumped into doing the shiny stuff first, the exciting stuff first, but like the value and utility wasn't there. So it's really thinking about what is going to serve your audience best.
Yeah. And it's that, you know, that mix that you've just mentioned of the hyper-personal, being able to offer those things to people in a very, very specific niche or Venn diagram of two areas. And then also, but the wider as well, the encouraging of community, the ownership play, that kind of thing. All really interesting stuff. In terms of your hopes for Web3, I mean, you've mentioned what you're achieving in terms of the education side with women of Web3 and how you want that to look. What are your hopes for how the technology takes off, say, over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, like, as I said before, I feel hopeful that a lot of the noise and chaos from last year has not necessarily been eliminated, but definitely has kind of swept out a lot of the bad, I would hope, so that it just makes it a nicer environment to be in. But like, there's always going to be these people who will take advantage of this like nascent technology in these nascent spaces. But I think we'll see a lot of companies emerge who have this long-term vision, and I'm excited to see that they're going to have the airspace to be actually able to communicate their vision. And I guess like people will be interested in them now, because, you know, people were really excited about the shiny stuff and they were really excited about the new stuff, but actually, because of all the crashes and because of the, you know, what went up must come down sort of thing, I think that these kind of, for one, I don't mean this, but like, you know, the companies that might have been seen as a little bit safe, a little bit boring, a little bit like not as kind of attractive as these big activations or kind of like, you know, wonder kids, whatever. But like, I think these companies will actually come into their own, and people will actually start to realize that the ones that are kind of building slowly, that do have the long-term vision, that do have, you know, like value for customers in mind, I think that they'll hopefully start to get the recognition that they deserve. I hope that we see more funding in education. I hope that we see more companies taking on that responsibility. I hope that we see them reaching out to people that aren't currently in this space, like not waiting for them to come to us, but reaching out to them, inviting them into this space in a safe and accessible way. I want to see it built, you know, with that kind of like equitable mindset. I want to see more women and minorities and diverse people being employed in this space as well. A lot of companies are doing, I've seen a lot of companies put a disclaimer at the end of their jobs. It kind of became quite fashionable, I think, in late 2022, which was like, we want more, you know, women to apply for these jobs. And we know that like women won't put themselves forward. So if you have this, this and this, like, please apply for this job. I'd actually love to see how they're following through on that, where they're actually posting those jobs. Are you posting them on jobs boards that are specific to women or specific to, you know, minority communities? Are you who's actually getting the job in the end? Like, you know, what are those stats? You know, just being a little bit more transparent about that sort of stuff. Is it for optics or do you actually mean it?
Yeah.
You know, what is your design team like for the products and the services that you're providing? Like, is that a diverse team? Because, you know, the same problems that we ran into in Web 2 are going to be repeated if we don't change that. I think, yeah, just creating a more comfortable environment that people feel, you know, welcome in, that they feel like they're able to explore, that they feel ownership about the space. That's what I would love to see in the next kind of like year. And just seeing more people come on board and adopt the technology in whatever way makes sense for them.
Brilliant. Well, that's all we have time for. Niamh, thanks so much for your time and best of luck with everything on the education around it. I'm looking forward to catching up with you again later in the year and hearing again. And yeah, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me. Hopefully it made sense, but sure, look, you can edit whatever you need to.
It was great. And thank you very much, everyone, for listening. You can find out more about Niamh and Women in Web3 in the link in the blurb for this podcast. And thank you very much for joining.